First item is approval of the minutes from the eighth meeting of the committee on Tuesday, March 6th.
I'll move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Luther so moves. Any discussion? Not all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Members, today we have two witnesses who'd like to testify, first being from Common Cause. Share some. You're going to switch around? Okay, that's fine. Judy Duffy's here from the League of Women Voters. I'd like to come forward and share your thoughts and input on the redistricting process. It'd be appreciated. Welcome to the committee. If you could please identify yourself for the tape. And
sure. First of all, thank you for giving us the opportunity to be here today. My name is Judy Duffy, and I represent the Minnesota League of Women Voters. The subject of redistricting has a long history with our organization, and our testimony before the Minnesota legislature during the past half century has changed very little. The League has a history of supporting redistricting on the basis of population for many decades. We believe that districts should be compact, contiguous, should be expeditiously assigned, and redistricting deliberations and actions should be easily accessible to the public. The League began looking at redistricting as an issue in 1947 and formulated our position in 1953. So as you can tell, we've had a considerable history with this issue. In 1980, the League supported a constitutional amendment establishing a bipartisan commission to draw legislative and congressional districts. The amendment was not enacted, but we continue to believe that this would be a better way to accomplish the redistricting task. In 1991, the League testified in favor of the standards that were proposed by the legislature. They were almost identical to the principles before us today. We would like to remind you now, 10 years later, that the adoption of standards and/or principles does not guarantee an expeditious or successful redistricting outcome. As in previous redistricting efforts, the legislative process was contentious and the final plan was drawn up by a special judicial panel, which was further complicated by the federal district court claiming jurisdiction and was finally resolved by a Supreme Court decision giving preference to the state panel. This was not a process that inspired confidence in the legislature's ability to carry out equitable and prompt redistricting. While we are appreciative of the preparatory work this committee has undertaken and the promise to accomplish the redistricting task before the conclusion of the 2001 session, we are aware that no statute or resolution to adopt principles or standards has been passed yet by either House. The Senate Subcommittee on Redistricting has already been riven by claims and counterclaims of partisanship. So far as we know, no effort has been made by the House and Senate to work cooperatively. We cannot be hopeful that a plan will be expeditiously or easily put in place. The legislature is too intimately involved in the results of the process to be the best originators of a good redistricting plan that is not subject to lawsuits and to delay. Time devoted by the legislature to redistricting could be much better spent on review and creation of legislation and oversight of state government. The citizens of Minnesota should not be subjected to another round of acrimony, confusion, and upset that followed the redistricting plan 10 years ago. It's now up to the legislature to overcome the poor record of past legislative redistricting. If a redistricting bill has not been passed by both houses by May of 2001, the legislature should form a multi-partisan redistricting commission composed of legislators, political parties, and citizens from various parts of the state to report back a plan back to the 2002 session for early adoption. Just by way of for your information, when I was looking into this testimony for today, I came across a copy of the Minnesota Voter, which is our membership newsletter that went out to our members in the November-December 1978 issue. And just let me read you some of what was in that article to let you know that some things never change. The Minnesota Constitution gives the state legislature the power to redistrict or reapportion congressional and legislative districts. This was accomplished between 1857 and 1913 by adding legislative seats from 21 to 67 and 42 to 130. Between 1913 and 1959, all attempts to redistrict collapsed both by failure of legislation to pass both houses and of the courts to intervene to compel redistricting. These failures were due to several factors: uneven population growth, threatening a loss of legislative seats in rural districts, and the inability of one party to elect a governor and majorities in both houses. Does this sound familiar? In 1959, a plan was forced by anticipated court action, but was found unconstitutional in 1964. After many court challenges and compromises, an act was signed into law in 1966. In 1971, it took a special session of 86 calendar days to pass a bill which was subsequently vetoed by the governor. By 1973, Minnesota got its plan from the courts. Just a little bit of history. Any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Duffy. Any questions from members? Stuff. I was curious, you mentioned the Representative Abrams, I know, has some history on this, but the commission that was proposed in 1980 that was put on the ballot, what were the selected groups, or how many members were part of that group? When would it have been formed, and would they do both congressional and legislative lines, if you have any knowledge of that?
I don't know the specifics of that particular bill. I know that the League's position on that is that we would call for members of the parties, citizen members, and other interested individuals from the legislature to be a part of that commission. I don't know that we set up a specific formula for how that would be formed, or the bill that passed and to put that on the ballot. I don't know those specifics. But I know the League would support some mixture of those sorts of individuals.
Sure. Okay. You also mentioned you wanted to make sure that the deliberations that we have is easily accessible to the public, which is what we've been doing. We've been having outstate hearings and going to rural Minnesota, et cetera. Is your definition of easily accessible to the public, I mean, public testimony at hearings, do you think that the website that's being put together on the GIS, GIS website is sufficient information for the public, for public access?
I don't know what is sufficient, but I certainly know that whatever you can do to get the information out and that it can be accessed with questions and so on and so forth is certainly the kinds of things we would be thinking about. The use of technology, certainly in reaching all corners of the state, is a plus.
Any other questions? Thank you, Ms. Duffy.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bruce Miller. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
I will. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bruce Miller. I'm the Executive Director of Common Cause Minnesota. I'm pleased to be here today to talk with you about redistricting. Redistricting is an issue that, much like the League of Women Voters, Common Cause has a long history of. As Representative Abrams, Representative Anderson have probably seen my predecessors here before. And like Ms. Duffy, I could probably have gone into our file cabinets and taken out the speech that we gave in 1980, the speech that we gave in 1990, and those speech I'm about to give in 2001. There's no doubt about it. Redistricting is partisan. It's highly partisan. But for years, Common Cause has believed we need to find new ways to think outside of the box to take politics out of the process of redistricting. We weren't actually formed until the early 1970s here in Minnesota, so we actually missed the 1970s call for an independent citizens commission to do redistricting. But in the 1980s, we too called for and supported an independent commission to do redistricting. Our calls went unheeded. and ultimately the courts decided the boundaries. Again, in the 1990s, we called for an independent citizens commission to do redistricting. Again, our call went unheeded, and again, ultimately the courts decided the boundaries. Well, here we are again, 2001. 20 years further down the road, 30 years further down the road, and we still believe that the best way to keep the courts out of the process is for the legislature now to create an independent citizens commission to do redistricting. And it is our belief that if we do not take that step this year to create an independent legislative, independent citizens redistricting commission, that it's almost certain that this decision will once again go to the court. And frankly, if it's going to go to the courts anyway, then I would raise the serious question about whether we should close down what the Pioneer Press, St. Paul Pioneer Press on Sunday, March 11th, called the war rooms that are currently in existence. Actually, this is kind of interesting. I took it offline, redistricting, and it talks about March Madness. I thought it was an appropriate kind of thing. Maybe we should take the money that's being spent on these four DFL and Republican war rooms, save the money, give it back to the taxpayers, use it for rebates, maybe even use it to finance campaign finance reform, which is the other issue we're working on this year. Four war rooms, four sets of staff, map makers, four budgets, and plus whatever the governor is spending on this effort. And no matter what happens, I am fully convinced at this point that this is going to go into the courts without a defensible kind of a mechanism. I believe that if we, at this point, as Ms. Duffy pointed out earlier, if this legislature cannot move forward by May of this year, that you might want to consider appointing an independent citizens commission to do the redistricting and to bring a plan back. I believe that the courts are going to look much more in a much more friendly manner on something that was not done, a plan that was not done by those who are most intimately affected by it, than they are a plan that is done by those people, yourselves, your colleagues, whose very political lives may be at stake by where a line is drawn. For years, Common Cause has supported, the same as the League has, redistricting on the basis of population. Those districts should be compact, contiguous, they should be expeditiously assigned. They shouldn't be drawn from a partisan point of view. They shouldn't be a part of an incumbent protection program. They should be done by citizens who have nothing at stake other than good representation. Mr. Chairman, I'm pleased to be here today, and I do think that we have the opportunity as a part of this discussion, because we're early on, and I commend you for all of your hard work, and I think you are seeing the same things that the public is seeing. We aren't, there's less forward progress on redistricting than there are in some of those XFL football games that I watch. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I guess I would just like to, again, as the League of Women Voters has, put Common Cause Minnesota on the same page and urge you to seriously consider in the next few weeks, if there is no forward progress, if there is no agreed upon plan, to once again look at an independent redistricting commission, which you can do by statute. It does not need to be done by a constitutional amendment. We testified to that in the interim. I'm here again today before Representative Abrams and Senator Pogemiller. I'm here again today to renew that call. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I thank you and thank members of the committee for having us here today to be a part of your deliberations and your ongoing discussions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Miller. Representative Abrams and Representative Gray. Representative Abrams.
Well, one thing doesn't change when you're in the minority or the majority. Whenever you're the chief author of a bill to have an independent redistricting commission, nobody wants to hear it. Because I had it last year and I was told it couldn't get through either the House or the Senate, so why should time be devoted? But the problem I'm having with the testimony among friends is that under the current Constitution, in order for a redistricting bill to be enacted, we could have an independent committee members put together a plan, but it still would require 68 votes in the House and 34 votes in the Senate. There's no independent mechanism to enact a law. So how do you delegate legislative authority when at the end of the day it has to be the legislature that has to vote on the plan?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Miller.
Representative Abrams, and we still like you for all of your hard work at the past. It's very much. And I think you pose an interesting question. And it speaks to something that we had a fair amount of discussion on this morning about when we were looking at the campaign finance bills that are currently around. It comes to perception and it comes to trust. It speaks to perception and it speaks to trust. It would take the trust of the legislature that an independent group of people could do a good job of drafting a redistricting plan, legislative and congressional. Yes, you'd have to pass it. That would be a commitment you would need to make going into the process, that you are going to trust these lines, and you are going to trust these 9 or 12 or 15 or 45 people that you appoint to be a part of this. In politics, as you all know and as I know, sometimes we want to have the cheese without avoiding the trap. This is one of those ways where the trap is the courts, and we're not going to get the cheese unless we have some trust in a process. Right now, there are too many people who are expressing distrust of this process up front. There are threats to go to court. And Mr. Chairman, Representative Abrams, I just feel as if you all can come up, we're willing to roll up our sleeves and go to work with you and come up with a plan of who these people would be and how it would work. And then it is a matter of trust, it's a matter of faith.
Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Miller, you know, one of the problems that I've had with the bill is how do you find these people and how are they appointed? And point I would make, Mr. Miller, and I'm not saying this in a partisan sense, but your organization submitted a name to the governor for the governor's commission, and that name was turned down. And I'm not going to get into if it was right or if it was wrong to have done so, but it happened. And you know, that's the problem that I think other states wrestle with in this area. I know under the Iowa plan for an independent commission that the Constitution requires an up or down vote on the plan without amendments in the House and the Senate. I don't know quite how you get there without some sort of constitutional mandate that there has to be a vote. So could you talk about how much faith you have in being able to find independent people given your organization's experience with Governor Ventura How do you get a bill to the floor given that we set our rules and the Senate sets their rules and there's nothing in the Constitution that would mandate either of us to have to take the plan and even have it drafted, let alone heard, let alone voted on in the bodies?
Mr. Miller?
Chairman, Representative Abrams, let me speak again to trust. I think if you're going to move down the steps, because we don't have a constitutional amendment, we don't have a way of forcing, of jamming a plan through, we do have to have some trust that once a citizen's plan is put before the body, that there isn't going to be a lot of tinkering, fixing, and patching going on, or any, for that matter. I mean, I think if that's a call to leadership, to any of you who serve in leadership, and to your leadership, that if a citizen's plan, if we were to go down the road, the big F, if we were to go down the road and the citizens bring in a plan, not every member is going to like it, probably not even everyone on the commission is going to like it, but it will be a good solid plan, I believe. And I believe I have my deep trust in the people. Now, how do you get a group of those folks? How do you get a group of people who would serve on a commission like that? Off the top of my thinking on this, and I frankly have not put a lot of deep thought into this because I don't hold out high hopes we're going to get there, but I would suggest that we ask people to nominate themselves and that we ask a body like the Commission on Judicial Selection, which has members on it appointed by the governor and by the legislature. We have ask the commission or empower the commission on judicial selection to screen the candidates and put up a slate of nominees that then could be appointed, for instance, by, and I'm going to speak to a multiple party system instead of just the those that are in power, that could be perhaps the Commission on Judicial Selection could nominate people, and they could be appointed by the highest ranking officials of the political parties, or of the legislature and the governor, perhaps include the Green Party as well. I do think there needs to be a certain amount of independence in this. And I think we need to not just have parties in the legislature represented. There's a whole lot of Minnesotans out there who really don't view themselves as of being a political party member. They view themselves as being unaffiliated or disconnected or unenfranchised or any number of other kinds of things that are out there. I think there are mechanisms, and if you're interested in pursuing it, I'd be one of the first people that will be in the room to help you look at other options. I think we have to think outside the box on this. If there's going to be an independent commission, we have to find a way to make it a trustworthy independent commission.
Mr. Miller, if there was a multi-party commission, should it be a majority vote of the commission for making? I mean, the governor has a task force now, and maybe you can provide your comments. Is it wise to have the governor with the task force as he does now? And I think there's a 70% rule with veto power by the chair. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Or
Well, I tend to believe in democracies. Democracies are wonderful. Everyone should own one. That happens to be the governor's democracy, not mine. But I do believe that there should be perhaps a strong majority position. And in order for there to be consensus and there to be a good plan, we may have to look at some kind of a supermajority. The governor's commission is a very fine commission, but it's set up in such a way that it's really just reviewing the process. I believe that there have been governor's commissions going back, perhaps Representative Anderson or Representative Abrams could assist me. I know there was one in, there was a governor's advisory commission that reviewed the legislative plans in 1990, and I don't remember going back to 1980. This is not something that's new. This has been something that's been done before. And as I understand it, this governor's commission is not drawing up any plans. They're just kind of reviewing the history and the process, and I presume at some point we'll comment on whatever you all are doing.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Miller, couple questions. First of all, can you give me some indication of what states, if any, have used this approach of an independent citizens commission to look at redistricting? And along with that, is there any real evidence in those states, if there are any states, that there's less litigation? I find that hard to believe. Even though it might be an independent commission, there's still going to be groups that are going to challenge their findings just as they would challenge our findings. So I wonder how you come to the conclusion that there's less litigation.
Mr. Miller.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gray, I really can't speak to which other states there are. I believe Representative Ames, do you?
Iowa.
Arizona, by citizen initiative in the last election, just adopted a citizens commission, citizens commission on redistricting. It is going through some of the very throes that you are talking about. When the and they did use a judicial screening mechanism, such as I've suggested. When they went through that, and one of the issues that's happening there, for instance, is the Hispanic community in Arizona feels as if they may be underrepresented because there's no one of Hispanic background who serves on the commission. That's a 5-member commission. I would advocate for a larger commission to take into account, or to at least create a greater likelihood that there would be no part of Minnesota's population that would be, or should be, or could be disenfranchised.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gray.
Along with it, I guess, what would you suggest should be the criteria of someone to serve on a commission like that? You know, when there's judicial selection, there's certain criteria that they look at in terms of people's backgrounds to determine what the selection process would be. Who should sit on a commission to decide redistricting?
Mr. Miller?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gray, I think any interested citizen should have the opportunity to participate. shouldn't be academics or politicians. There should be a way to put real people, working people. It's kind of like, let's put a postman, let's put a server in a restaurant, let's look at putting some people whose lives are impacted by these decisions on the commission. I don't think that we need to go much beyond that for criteria, other than the one that I stipulated is that there should be, I believe, a large number of people who are not affiliated with political parties, who have some kind of representation on this. Increasingly, those are the increasing body of the body politic in the state. Not Democrats, not Republicans, not Greens, not Independence Party, but in truly unaffiliated independent voters. And they should have a voice in where these lines are being drawn.
Thank you.
Representative Gray, I think before the Arizona initiative, I think the nonpartisan commissions, I think there were 11 states that have the commissions that draw legislative lines and 5 with congressional lines, I believe.
I think that's correct.
So, right, Arizona. I'm just curious, Mr. Miller, and I didn't ask Ms. Duffy this, but there was support for the 1980 ballot initiative that was there for the bipartisan commission at that time, bipartisan. Any idea why it failed or didn't pass in 1980? And I don't know what the margin was.
Mr. Chairman, I simply don't have a recollection of what that was in the end. If there was ever a real analysis as to why it failed.
Representative Abrams?
The reason, Mr. Chairman, the members, that I think it failed, maybe Representative Anderson can add in because he was kind of a participant, is that there was a big campaign against initiative and referendum that year.
That's correct.
And the advertising campaign is, if you're not sure, don't vote, or if you're not sure, don't vote yes. And all the ballot initiatives went down on very close votes. A few of them may have had a majority of votes, but not a majority of those voting. But the advertising campaign used by the opponents of initiative and referendum was such that it brought down all the ballot initiatives, all the ballot questions, not just the redistricting commission. I think the redistricting commission was the closest of them all. It came within 2,500 votes, if I'm not mistaken, passing.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Representative Anderson.
Mr. Miller, who would be your appointing force of your commission?
Who would appoint
Mr. Miller?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I think we should look at the governor, certainly, and then I believe we should look at the House appointing so many, the Senate appointing so many, and if we include the Green Party appointing so many. For those truly independents, the nonpartisans that I'm concerned about, we may need to look at asking the Supreme Court to make those decisions. I don't have a firm plan, Representative Anderson. I didn't come prepared to argue for a specific plan, just for a discussion that we need to look at one.
Well, you're asking a politician to appoint a nonpartisan.
I, Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I think this is if we go down this path, this is the real wrestling match to figure this out.
We
may have to get in the ring to settle this one.
I have another question,
Representative Anderson.
Do you think that if a bill were to pass this legislature and signed by the governor? A governor who has called for a fair bill and a competitive bill, that would stand up in court.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I think that we have, under the current set of circumstances, probably the best chance of it happening that we've had in 40 years.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I have my sincere doubts that we'll get that far yet.
Ms. Duffy, did you want to come back and clarify any comments regarding the 1980? I thought maybe your hand went up, but I'm not sure. Thank you, Mr. Miller.
Thank you.
Ms. Duffy is the chief author of Initiative and Referendum, myself, which we won't get in that debate, but I know the league has opposed that and did 1980, and you, even though it passed with the majority, aside from those voting no, you may have helped bring down some of the other initiatives.
I think back in the 1980s, I don't know that it holds true today, there was a distinct fall off on voting for constitutional amendments back in the 1980s. Representative Abrams spoke to that. And I do believe part of the reason for the defeat of those amendments were, first of all, they were somewhat complicated, but second of all, a no vote or a non-vote, as you know, in Minnesota would count as a no vote. So if people voting in the election chose not to vote on the constitutional amendments, then in fact it would be counted as a no vote for those amendments, which I think probably contributed to the defeat of those amendments as well. That was all.
Okay. Ms. Duffy, can I ask you one other question? I know the League has testified before the GIS subcommittee in the past, and you just mentioned about redistricting on the basis of population, et cetera. I mean, does the League's, would you say, I'm just curious, would you support redistricting more often than every 10 years based on population? Every 5 years? I mean, Representative Tingelstadt, who's no longer here, I think has 15, 16,000 more people than many legislative districts. She's way above the ideal, so she's clearly out of the one-person, one-vote boundaries. And any comments on that?
I think the League position speaks to redistricting after every census, which would be every 10 years. Granted, there are significant population changes within a decade. Certainly the last decade has shown considerable shifts in population, but whether or not we could support it more frequently, I don't know at this point. The position does read following every 10-year census.
Okay. And do you believe if there was a nonpartisan commission or multi-partisan, multi-party commission that was put together, should that be by majority vote in terms of submitting a plan to the legislature, as Mr. Miller discussed? Or
I would think that commission would need to have a consensus. And whether it was by majority vote, I would actually like to see a stronger support than sheer majority, supermajority, as he mentioned, I think would probably have a better chance of making it through any sort of an approval process. There'd have to be strong support for that plan that was put forward.
And I know you have a representative on the Governor's Commission as well, and do you think that's a helpful commission? And I think they have a 70% threshold.
It's an advisory commission that was formed by the governor. I think it, in a way, it could be looked at as a prototype for this kind of multi-party commission. Perhaps some finer definition of what the criteria might be for members of the commission could be drafted, but I know there was an attempt to make a geographic representation, party representation, knowledge of the process that somebody could bring to the commission, as well as other expertise. So I think there was an effort put forward that could be refined and could be looked at in a more standardized format.
Thank you. Representative Seifert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I had to step out for a second. I apologize if this was already asked, but I was reading the letter that was handed out about expeditiously assigned. What does that mean? Or what in your interpretation when I was
assigning
said that we believe districts should be compact. I understand that. Contiguous, I understand that. Should be expeditiously assigned, which I don't understand. And then redistricting deliberations and actions should be easily accessible to the public. I do understand that. So what, it's in the second paragraph.
Yeah,
Ms. Duffy?
We're pulling this from some earlier conversation that we had. I believe it's how the numerical designations are made is one issue I think that has been out there. And I think what it speaks to is just an expedited process for all the consideration that needs to be taken with regard to redistricting. If it has anything more to it than that.
Thank you. Any other questions from members? I know there was a representative from the Citizens League who was contacted and they were maybe going to attend. Thank you, Ms. Duffy. I'm not sure if anyone was here to testify from the Citizens League or if there's anyone else in the audience who is interested in coming forward and commenting. If not, all right. Thank you, members. Committee is adjourned.
Spoke after my name.